Hey friend, welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own business. I've actually been stuck at home for a while now after contracting COVID, but thankfully I'm making what seems to be a pretty quick recovery. Because of all that, I had to postpone the interview I initially had scheduled for this week and was tempted to push everything back anyway, but so many of you were so incredibly supportive and encouraging in the face of potentially missing this week's episode, and I just really wanted to put something together if I could. So at the last minute, I reached out to a few of our former guests and asked if they'd be willing to jump on a Zoom call for a short panel-style interview. All three of them said yes and joined me for the call within a few hours of my text message. When I refer to these guests as friends, they've totally earned that through showing up for stuff just like this. So listen in as Wen-Ting, Bob, Jake, and I discuss what's been going on in their businesses since their respective episodes, how much money they made at their first jobs, and what mantras have been playing on repeat in their heads. Welcome, welcome here to our virtual panel for Houston Made. Today, I am joined with Bob Sutton of Statesman Beverage Company. Bob was a guest for episodes 4 and 5, which was a part of our initial launch of the show. And we're also joined by Wen-Ting Xia, who runs and operates Refinement House, who was a guest on episodes 6 and 7. Of the show. So our first like guest after launch. So you guys are kind of early vets of the show. Jake Cooper is also with us of Rent eBoards, a purveyor and distributor and a salesman in ways of personal electric vehicles, here in Houston, owns the kind of the franchise and the licensee, bunch of stuff. He was a guest for episode 13. Thanks so much for joining us. This will be kind of a fun format. So as we kind of jump into this, maybe an elevator pitch on who you are and what your business is for those unfortunate souls that haven't heard your episodes already.
Sure. So I'm Bob Sutton, co-founder and CEO of Statesman Beverage Co. Statesman Beverage Co. is a cocktail mixer company. Our mission is to help amateur mixologists make great cocktails at home. And we've been in business since 2017. Me and my business partner, Holly Tate, started the company and have been growing. Actually, since we were on the podcast, we've actually sold $4 million. I'm just kidding.
That's amazing. Because you're on the podcast, we might add.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we I just wanted to throw out some astronomical number since the podcast, which we recorded in February or March.
It was certainly long before the launch. It was early in the year and then we launched later in May. So
yeah.
Thanks for sharing. Wen-Ting, why don't you fill us in and fill Bob in and our guests in?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Wen-Ting. We are Refinement House. We are a zero waste, eco-friendly startup right in the heart of Houston. I actually started the business in an extra room within my bungalow. Actually started off more on secondhand vintage items and then slowly expanded into an entire eco line products for home goods, cleaning, beauty care, body care, pretty much anything that you would normally buy around your house, but with an eco-friendly twist to it. So things that are recyclable, reusable, compostable. And now we're actually, I just updated Rusty on our new venture, but we are now shifting the business from retail into distribution wholesale. So really focusing on our vantage point, which is procurement, design, and distribution. So actually supporting other local retail shops, boutique stores, and eco zero waste shops in fulfilling their own vision of what living sustainably means for them. So very excited to join both of you guys again and sharing just a little bit about any updates and our journey.
Yeah, I do appreciate the update. I'm excited for where y'all are headed and the transitions you're going to make. I made reference earlier to the fact that even in our episode, Wen-Ting, you said something along the lines of, between you and me, I don't really want to be stuck like here opening the door, which I always thought like in that moment, I was like, oh, she's gonna transition onto bigger and different things.
Yeah, it's a learning process, right? I think being a small business and entrepreneur, like you get to try out so many different things. And I think for us is like, I'm starting to feel a little burnt out because we try to fulfill every part of the cycle from manufacturing to design, to making, marketing, selling, everything versus, you know, narrow down what you're really good at. And that in the long term is going to help you reach more at scale. So I think for us is over the year of actually having our own retail shop, having a zero waste store in Houston, which I love, I do believe it's very hyper-local. And I think for us to actually have a larger impact at scale would be actually doing what we're good at, which is the procurement, design, and the distribution. So I think for us, at least for me personally, it's a little bittersweet because we launched the store here. We have so many friends and repeated guests like you, Rusty, that I've met. But in the end, I think the end goal is the same because I do want to reach more households.
Yeah. So
from there, it's us shifting our strategy to be, okay, if I can support all these wonderful businesses that are already established, that have their brick and mortar, that have a physical location for people to go to, we can be more in the background and actually, you know, be located wherever we are in supporting businesses nationwide, globally. So that's kind of the thought process behind it.
I think it's going to be super cool. Jake, for those that don't know who you or were foolish enough to skip your episode, why don't you give us a quick elevator pitch on who you are, what you do, maybe beyond anything I said.
Sure. Yeah. Appreciate you having me back. It's a pleasure being back. So my name is Jake. I run a electric skateboard and just in general, like personal electric vehicle rentals, sales and services business in Houston. And we also have like several locations sort of across the, we're a growing network of locations that are growing across the country. But, yeah.
That's exciting, man. Thank you so much for being here. You and I recorded our episode maybe a month ago, maybe 6 weeks, not too long ago. But have there been any updates? I think I saw something about you making, did you officially quit NASA?
Yeah. So I officially like quit my full-time job. And so I am, I'm all in it to win it or lose it. Who knows?
That's awesome, man. Well, congratulations. I know at the time you were kind of just like, well, we'll see how it goes. Seems like it's going well, but that's a big deal.
I'm actually in San Diego right now. We came out here we recently partnered with Segway, which makes a variety of really cool personal electric vehicle products. You know, everything from like go-karts to like dirt bikes to scooters and all sorts of stuff. And so as a partnership we just made with them. And so we came out here, they were hosting an event out here in San Diego to promote one of their like new e-bikes. And so we came out here and helped out with that and whatnot. So that's where I'm at right now.
That's awesome, man. So leaving NASA, you have to put in 2 weeks notice or did you just kind of say, hey, I'm not coming back?
Well, when I originally went on my like leave, I gave my 2 weeks notice at that point. So here I was just like, I mean, I had already turned everything in. So I was like, all right, officially, I'm just not coming back. They offered me a part-time job, which, you know, maybe I foolishly declined, but.
No, there is certainly some wisdom to jumping in with both feet and saying, hey, like, this is it, sink or swim. I think maybe you and I've talked about, I know I've talked about it on the show before, but there's a lot of other realtors who started around the time that I did who were genuinely better at me at the business in almost every way than I am or than I was. They're just better than me. And then they didn't do it because they didn't need to do it. Like they were just like, never mind. This real estate stuff's a lot of work. And so jumping in with both feet can be, could be a good decision. And then Bob, I know, again, you and I recorded our episode really early on. It was kind of a proof of concept for the show. And then it took me 4 months to figure out how to actually get this thing to the public. So I know that it was long before you launched your third syrup. At the time you had just the two. So I guess since February, what has changed? What are any updates that you can share about Statesman?
Yeah. We've had, this year has been a good year, a learning year. We our third product, Earl Grey Cocktail Syrup is what it's called, has hit the market. It you were at our mojito launch party back in 2018, I think. We threw a big bash. We had a lot of people in downtown, lots of free booze and food and everything. It was a lot of fun. So this one went off with a lot less fanfare. And I think because of that, it was a slower start for this one, which is expected. It's not Earl Grey. When you hear Earl Grey, you don't just think, oh my gosh, I have to have that right now. That's my dream cocktail, because it's a flavor. It's not actually a full rounded out cocktail mix. We use it primarily with old fashions, makes a very smooth and slightly bitter old fashioned, which is a typical old fashioned, I guess. But I would say since we talked, there's two things that we've learned. One is that the pandemic has actually finally caught up to us in a production sense. Most of last year and even early on this year, we didn't experience a whole lot of supply chain disruption with us, you know, getting our bottles or labels and that kind of thing. It was a little bit difficult to find bottles early on, but we had stored enough that we could still meet demand. Right now, we're having trouble with logistics and shipping. We actually have a few thousand dollars of bottles on a pallet on a truck somewhere, and it's between two shipping companies, and neither one of them wants to pay the other for delivery fees.
Oh my gosh.
And we're coming up on Q4, which is our big quarter, and so we really need those bottles to start production on getting stocked up for holiday season. So there's a little stress around that, I'll be honest. So that's one piece. And then the other is for anybody who's worked with Amazon. I've spent most of the summer experimenting with different models on how to actually become more profitable on Amazon, because it's hard to do. Like, they change the fee structures from time to time. They charge you for random things that you don't realize. We're finally in the process of getting like a three pack, like a sample pack, I guess, of all three in one unit, which will cost less than all three individually and will actually make more money on it if we sell it through Amazon, because the shipping costs will be less, but also all of their fees will be less. And so anyway, I don't know why it took me 4 years to like do those calculations and think like, how is Amazon screwing me over? But we finally figured it out. And so hopefully if we can get these bottles, we'll be ready for that by this holiday season. As I mentioned before, you know, this is it's a side hustle for me. So it's trying to figure out these problems in the margins of my week. It's made me feel like I'm more burned out on this than I really am, because I work really hard at my day job. Then I get home, and if there's this big problem waiting for me, it's just very stressful. And not, I don't really want to get into the hard work of figuring out how to get these two shipping companies to talk to each other. And
yeah,
I don't want to pay the extra $150 that they're going to charge each other for just getting the product that I've already paid shipping for. So anyway,
it's crazy.
Bob, I'm totally feeling what you're feeling, by the way. For logistics right now, it's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that's the case with like all over the country, but, but yeah, I feel like I've somehow avoided it up to more recently, but now, I mean, it's terrible.
And right now all of the supply chain, like, manufacturers and like just like we're in the distribution channel right now. It's funny because this morning we were looking at California surf waves, because my partner surfs, and literally behind the surf competition, they were like shipping containers literally drifting at sea. There are five or six of them in the background and you can see it. So it's definitely a huge issue. And we have a few international global suppliers where they've more than doubled their shipping cost. And it's because a lot of the shipping containers are actually not going back overseas. So in general, they're less on containers. And then two, they're floating right now in the ocean and come back in. So it's definitely been a nightmare.
This
year has certainly been more strange. I felt like even in real estate, and some of this has to do with materials and stuff, but like 2020 was actually a really normal year, other than we had to be careful about masks and stuff like that. It was this year that housing supply and inventory dropped because of supplies for builders to build new homes. And then once that dropped, everything else, demand went up, yada, yada. So I had some kind of lightning round questions, because I know we've just got a few minutes here before everybody has to jet to their respective meetings and whatnot. So these are just kind of some fun things that I didn't get a chance to ask in our interviews, but I really wanted to. So the first one is, what was your first job and how much were you making? And I'll go first, because I'll say my first real job, where I wasn't like being paid by one of my mom's friends. My first job was working at Panera, Panera Bread Company, as a cashier and bagel slicer and all of that. And I think I was making like $7.15 an hour. So anyway, that's where I was. I just think it's interesting to see where people started and how they've kind of progressed from there.
My first job was a lifeguard in our community pool. It was, I believe at that time, it was like the only job you can get before you turn 16. You can be a certified lifeguard at the age of 15. And I did that for 4 summers. And I think I have to give my parents a lot of credit, because they've definitely instilled that work hard mentality from a very, very young age of, if you want something, you're going to have to work for it. Nothing was really handed to me. So I got a job right when I could in high school, and was a lifeguard for 4 summers, got a ridiculous tan line every time when I returned to school. But yeah, I think at that time, probably, I think the pay was like $7 an hour, which was pretty, pretty decent. You got to hang out with your friends, hang out at the pool. So
yeah. Did you save that money, or did you spend it? Like, what were you doing? How old were you?
15.
15.
I didn't have a car yet. So probably spent it on like going to the movies with my friends.
Yeah.
Eating out. Yeah.
That's awesome. Bob, what about you?
Yeah. So I think my first job, first real job, not like mowing yards and stuff like that. My first real job, I applied to work at Jason's Deli when I was 15. And they said no, because I didn't have a car. So I actually started, I think, 2 weeks after my birthday. I was the baked potato guy at Jason's Deli. Wen-Ting, I made $7.05 an hour. And I remember... And the reason I remember that is like, it was a big deal when you went from 7.05 to like 7.15, you know, like there were like cents difference. Yeah. And it was like, I just got a big raise. Like, that was legit. So yeah, I did that job for probably only maybe 8 months, seven, 8 months, because I went home at the end of the night reeking of baked potatoes. And
yeah,
I didn't eat a baked potato after that for like years. I just couldn't handle it.
That's so funny. I distinctly remember that when I quit that Panera job, two of my like best friends had gotten a job at this like Boston Market offshoot called Rotisserie Grill. They don't exist anymore. But so two of my best friends were working there, and they were like, hey, we can get you a job. And I was just gonna be like, oh, I can just go work with my best friends. Yeah, I'm going to do that. So I put in my notice at Panera, and they were like, hey, man, listen, we really value you here. Like, we're prepared to give you a 50 cent an hour raise. Like, I was working like 12 hours a week. Like, hey man, that $6 before taxes, we really value you.
Yeah. And you can you can earn quite a bit.
Yeah.
With that extra $6.
After school, 4 hour shifts.
Yeah.
Jake, what about you? What was your first job? Do you remember?
Yeah, I actually pulled up my Excel spreadsheet, because that's who I am. But I I know. I have a couple of weird answers to this question. So my first paid job was actually when I was living in Taiwan. I was recruited as a child model for like clothing and stuff.
Wow.
There are red flags going off on your behalf right now.
I would love to see those photos. That would be really
Yeah, there were a bunch of brands actually. It was like a bunch of European clothing brands, but the most like well-known brand is probably like New Balance. But it was like mostly clothing stuff. So I did that on like weekends and stuff when I was there, and it was 100% overpaid. It was like $30 an hour. It was only until like my last year at NASA where I was even making that much money again. It was stupid. But then back in the, when I moved back to the US, I worked at like a camp counselor, something for like robotics, because I was really involved in robotics. I think I paid like $10 an hour. I say that, but I'm looking at the numbers right now. I do know that. But these aren't like real, these are like seasonal jobs. That was like 2 weeks out of a summer. Then I worked a season at like a Gap outlet that my sister worked at because I was bored one summer or one winter season. I hated that. I absolutely hated that so much. And then my like last like legit first job, I would say that I was I worked actually at an indoor electric go-kart track. And so I would
see.
And that was like, yeah, that was like eight, probably like eight or something. I actually don't have that number, but yeah, it was like probably like whatever minimum wage at that time was.
Yeah.
But yeah, now you can see where that took me.
Yeah. And there it is. That's the seeds. See, this is why we asked this, and I missed this great question in the interview. So, okay. A couple more. Here's, have there been any like quotes or mantras that have kind of been ringing around in your head lately? I know Jake, when you and I talked, we talked about the kind of the phrase that you've got written up on your wall, but I know each season, I always feel like there's something that's kind of just coming back to me. And like one of those for me lately, which is a friend of mine, Haley, who's done a lot of work helping me get the show off the ground. Like she'll say it a lot is do it scared. I know Will Smith did a big thing about that not too long ago, but just saying like, hey, yeah, you just got to do it. And there's a lot of stuff in my life that I'm like, I don't know if I can pull this off, but I just need to like do it anyway. And that's been in my head. So any thoughts that anybody has kind of been toying around with lately?
That was sort of similar to what was written on my wall, right? Which I don't know if I want to spoil here or make people go back and listen to the episode. It was like, start before you think you're ready. Mm. So sort of a similar tone, right? Or tune rather, to just like, if you, you know, just like do it, you'll figure it out. As long as you're, you know, putting the effort in and, you know, you've got the drive, like it's going to work out. And if it doesn't, you're going to learn a shit ton along the way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think for me is everything in life is temporary. Mm. The bad, I think you take it in stride. And I always try to remind myself that in situations that are uncomfortable, example, our move in the next 3 weeks across country and pretty much starting on a new vision for the business is everything in life is temporary. And don't feel so rooted in your beliefs as well as where you physically are, because things will change, obviously. With the world that it is right now, I think we are really evaluating on how to think a little bit ahead of where is digital going for someone like us, where we were very retail focused. What does that look like in the future? And try to shift and adjust our sales in that way. So for me, it's always been everything in life is temporary.
Yeah. That reminds me of another thing that has been floating around my life, like recently, which I think is an Enneagram 7. This is always something I just need to come back to. Which
I think
is
I'm a 7 too.
Think so? Maybe.
Yeah.
Bob has thought he's a 7 over the years as well.
I'm not. I know I'm not.
it's over. He's definitive. Here it is. But the thought is that that this is life, that I have a real bad habit of saying, well, when, you know, this happens, when I get this gig, when I get this amount of money, when I'm not worrying about this, or when the boys are finally this stage, that's when, and I just have to be like, no, but like, this is it. This is all life is. It's a series of days just like today. And yes, there might be really cool, amazing things ahead of me, but there's also just life today that I have to live. So Bob, anything that's been ringing around your head?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a 6, Rusty. I'm a 6 with a 7 wing. And I'm a counterphobic 6. So my quote is actually a little bit, not the opposite of what you guys have said, but my challenge has never been to try new things. I love to try new things. I put myself out there quite a bit, but, This quote actually came from my dad. We were talking about some logistical challenges and something that he said when he was leading his team at his office before he retired. He said, the shortcut is doing things the right way. Mm-hmm. And that really stuck with me, you know, with so many like things in my life where I take on a lot of projects and then like, how do I get this done as fast as I can? And then making mistakes along the way. His advice was the shortcut is actually doing it the right way. That way you don't make all those other mistakes and you find that that is the shortest path is the right way. I don't know why that's really stuck with me. You know, it helps me to also be deliberate in my actions, on a lot of things that are going on in life. Cause I feel like, Russ, you know me. Yes. I act like a seven. Sometimes I chase the butterfly, the shiny object a lot, but yeah, it just helps me to kind of stay centered and focused on what's in front of me and take the next deliberate step.
I love it. Well, guys, thank you for joining me for this kind of quick COVID Houston made panel. I genuinely appreciate it. I cherish all three of you. I think that y'all are all just really wonderful people and consider you friends. And I'm so grateful that you have given me a chance to kind of step into your business and catch a little glimpse. I am for all three of you as your businesses progress and change and evolve. So as always, if there's anything I can do or Houston Made can do to support you, I'm glad and just excited to do that for you. So thank you guys so much.
Thanks for having us.
A huge thank you to Bob, Wenting, and Jake for joining me, and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. Seriously, if you haven't heard their respective episodes of this show, I'd absolutely recommend that you go back and listen to them. Each of their businesses are incredibly unique, and yet there's so many guiding principles that apply beyond their respective industries. In the meantime, go find them and follow them on Instagram at StatesmanBevCo, at Refinement House, and at Rent E Boards. Go show them some love and support their businesses. While this wasn't our typical format, I'm truly grateful that I was able to pull it together and had a lot of fun with it. If you'd be interested in hearing more roundtable discussions like this, let me know. Your feedback legitimately helps me shape and develop this show. So please feel free to hit me up on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or the show at Houston Made Podcast. I'd love to hear about your projects and endeavors, but again, your feedback helps a lot. Houston Made is hosted by me, Rusty Gates. It's produced and edited in collaboration with Luke Bronner. Our artwork was designed by Stephanie Leal and Sarah Elwegfi in collaboration with Mac Ryan Creative. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. And as always, Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection, and in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories, by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit milieumedia.com.